I was in the left seat, and my shoulders and my knees and my head were just all banging around in the cabin for I don't know how long. It felt very slow motion. But then there was a rapid stop, and that rapid stop quickly became a rapid liquid stop, and I was underwater, upside down, in a helicopter.
It happened that fast?
It was that fast. We were flying, everything was fine, and then it blew apart when I was underwater, I didn't know any, it just, it felt like the world was shaking apart.
What did it sound like?
Screeching and cracking. I had double hearing protection, but it was kind of like a pounding and a screeching. I got to actually listen to it on the voice recorder, and it is literally screeching and crashing. I don't know how to link it to what anyone else would hear. I guess like a car accident.
Was that difficult, listening to those recordings?
Well, I had the opportunity to read the recordings months in advance. Actually, this time last year was the first time that I had the ability to read through the recording and to go through and see what I had done right. I'd read the investigation and seen everything that I'd done wrong and what the crew had done wrong, because that's what they focused on. But to see what I'd done right and everything that I did to the best of my ability, but then to listen to it and hear the sounds, it was, I would say, troubling, but I was ready for it based upon my desire. I didn't have to. My lawyers could have just listened to it with me outside of the room, but I wanted to make sure that the nonverbals made it into there.
Leone is referring to nonverbal communications going on in the cockpit. He wanted to make sure they were part of the investigation record, which would later be summed up in what's called a FAM, or Final Action Memorandum. The Final Action Memo says there were 6 minutes between impact and the time you fired off a flare. What was going on in those 6 minutes?
So, abusive vibrations, and then it's stopping underwater, I did what every aviator would do out there. We train on it all the time, and yearly we're flipped over in a chair and go through the procedures. I did the procedures that the Coast Guard taught me. I retracted my collective. I found my exit, pushed the exit out of the way, undid my cords, released my harness, and pulled through the hole to get out. Now, this is where it changed a little bit from what I'd done before. And I was kicking to get out, and I wasn't getting to the surface. I hadn't put my regulator in to breathe underwater yet. I just assumed I'd be able to get out quicker than be able to have to put that in. And normally when we do it, it's a slow flip in a chair. This was an unbelievable fast hitting the water. I can't quote on how many Gs, but I know there was a lot of impact, having been flying through the air at 125 knots and hitting the wires at approximately 115 feet. At that point, we were a projectile.
Leone used an emergency air supply that helicopter crews carry. It's called a HEDS bottle. That stands for Helicopter Emergency Egress Device. It carries about 1.5 cubic feet of compressed air, but how long that lasts depends on how you breathe. In training, Leone could usually get between 7 and 13 good breaths out of it, but after the crash, as he tried to find his way out of the underwater wreckage, he only managed 6 breaths.
Coming to the surface, my eyes immediately were burning, because when the 6017 crashed, we were pretty much max fueled with JP-8 jet fuel, which is very similar to kerosene. So when I came up on the surface, I was covered in kerosene, still had my helmet on. And I started looking for anything to float on, because I couldn't kick hard enough to keep my head and my body out of the water enough to be comfortable.
He broke his collarbone in the accident, and as he tried to inflate his life vest, Leone discovered his arms were not working.
And it was the first time I'd ever asked my body to do something, and my body said no. But my wrist worked, so I cranked my wrist against the base of the regulator, which was sitting right to my left, and for some reason it worked with just that little bit of wrist motion.
The vest inflated, but there were still problems. Leone's dry suit was torn and filling with water, and although he says he was not in pain, there were injuries.
I had a piece of helicopter that had lodged itself in my left forearm. My right hand was fairly mutilated because of pounding against something in the helicopter. My right shin was opened to the bone. The bone looked like a corn cob that had been eaten all the corn off, like the white remaining husk of a corn. And my left ankle was badly swollen, but the only real injury was a broken collarbone and a dislocated shoulder, which are both seatbelt injuries from the seatbelt that saved my life.
Now, floating in the water between James Island and La Push, Washington, Leone began to look for his crewmates.
I had assumed, based on every survival class that I'd taken, that everybody else would be there. I've not taken classes where you're the only one left to survive. You're always a part of a team. And I couldn't find the Sean, Brett, and Adam. I didn't know where they were. It was very disheartening. But I knew I had to stay afloat if I could ever figure out where they were.
He looked for his emergency beacon, but with his arms disabled, he couldn't get to it. Next, he reached for a signaling mirror to try and reflect sunlight and catch someone's attention. As he opened that pocket, out popped a pencil-sized flare. He managed to assemble it using only his fingertips, and by the time he fired it into the air, a skiff from the La Push Harbormaster's office was already heading in his direction.
As they approached me, they said, "We're going to grab you. We've got other people looking for the other three." So I, at that moment, had the wherewithal to tell them, "I don't want you to pull on my arms," because they didn't feel like they were attached. In my head, I envisioned them kind of being disconnected from my body, although my fingers worked because I couldn't use the rest of them. I just pictured that they were either just flopping around with nerves just connected, but with bones not. So they, with all the training that they have had used in pulling fishing nets aboard that very boat, they scooped me out of the water by dropping the gunwale of the vessel below my back and sliding me into the bow of that John boat, an aluminum, I call it a John boat, but it's just an aluminum craft, maybe 14 feet, maybe longer, with an outboard on it. But those were the heroes of the day for me.
Leone was taken to a nearby hospital and then medevaced to Seattle for further recovery. His parents in Maine and Florida and his family from Sitka met him there within 12 hours.
Ellen, my unbelievably great wife, loaded up the children, got on an Alaskan Airlines flight the Coast Guard booked for her, and she landed in Seattle. The pilots came on to the intercom and had everyone sit down so that she and the children could get off, and the Coast Guard brought her directly to the hospital to see me.
Less than a week after the crash, hundreds of Sitkans, as well as high-ranking Coast Guard officers and elected officials, gathered at Air Station Sitka for a memorial service in honor of Kruger, Banks, and Hoke. Leone was there, too.
I had wanted to attend the memorial service in La Push, but my doctors wouldn't let me go because they were afraid of blood clotting.
Were you ready to leave? I mean, were you medically ready to leave the hospital when the memorial service happened, or was that a little faster than your... it just seems fast to me, I guess.
I didn't like being in a hospital. I don't like being a patient. I like being helping people. I don't like being helped. I don't know maybe it's about my personality. The day after the accident, I'd asked when I could stand up, and they said, just wait one more day. So it was day three. I stood up, walked around, did the stairs, and on that day, I started the long process of physical therapy. But yeah, it was quick, similar injuries to a car accident. And obviously physical wounds were very quick to heal. Now the mental stuff took a lot longer.